Welcome to a boxing moment here on RSG. Before I get started, I want to make sure all y'all catch us on realsportsguys.com and catch all our content. We just dropped another podcast on our one mic talking about breaking down the NFC East preview. You got to check it out. We got some interesting takes on what's going to happen in the East. And then we also have a new podcast that we dropped with the Big Show. Looking at what should be the solution for the one and done with college basketball. But tonight, you know, this is all about a boxing moment. This is all about when we talk about boxing. And this is kind of a special show in a sense that, you got my man Darnell here. He's actually out in Baltimore for the Gervonta Davis fight. So he's out there, you know, he's out there working them corners. Did you run into Avon? You run into Brother Muzan out there while he's out in Baltimore?
No, I didn't run into any of them. I'm actually not in Baltimore right now. I'm actually on campus at University of Maryland in the dorm right now. But
you talked to Josh Jackson. You talked to Josh Jackson over there. What's he look like?
I was gonna go to practice, but I ended up going to the Wreck and Hooping instead. I just let them because they were gonna do a 7-on-7 kind of thing. So I just went in and hooped. And
okay.
He got out of practice. So
they think them Terps are going to be sneaky. They're going to have a couple upsets in them. So
You know, we got Maryland, and another team to watch out for is the Miami Hurricanes. But let's get into some boxing today, though.
It's all about boxing. But I think before we get into talking about the fight tonight, you know, obviously we had a loss, and I wanted to give you a little bit of time. I know we talked about it on our other show, but you know, given that this is where we focus on boxing primarily, why don't you share for our viewers who may not know what happened here recently, you know, kind of share death, you know, with Maxim dying at 28 years old, you know, maybe talk a little bit about that before my sense is that there'll be a 10 count recognition of him tonight, and so I thought we'd start our show with that.
All right, so. It's a very tough pill to swallow for the boxing community. Not only for Maxim Dadashev, because he had his fight was on national television on ESPN Plus. But it was on the undercard of Teofimo Lopez and Tanaka. It was a very sad thing, obviously, and And the scary part about it was that we knew it was like an accumulation of punches kind of thing where there never seemed like there was one specific moment where you said, okay, this is where he should stop the fight. Because he stopped the fight and it seemed like it was a good point to stop the fight because it seemed like he was falling behind in the cards and maybe he needed to knock out some win. And it clearly, he probably wasn't going to get the knockout because he was running out of gas. The guy was coming forward, just coming on stronger and stronger. It was a wild decision, obviously, to stop the fight in that point. But before that, there wasn't really one moment where you could say, okay, he just landed this big 5-6 combination, 5-6 punches at one time. But it wasn't like a moment like that where you say, okay, get out of the fight now. Like, there weren't any knockdowns or anything like that. So now that's the really scary part of it. Like, what could have been done to prevent this? Like, but then also, we also had another death this week. I believe his last name was Santillan. Mm. And he was he's from Argentina. I didn't get to see the fight at all. I just saw a post on Facebook. I saw a video of him in the ring after the cards were announced. He collapsed in the ring, and I guess he passed on later on, either the next day or something like that, later in the week. But that's these kind of things. It's the unfortunate and the danger side of boxing, and heart and prayers go out to the families of these two men that died doing what they loved to do and trying to make a name for himself in the sport of boxing. You have any thoughts on that you want to share?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, as we talked about before, you know, and boxers taking precautions, you know, after the death of in the Mancini fight, as you know, we talked about when it was 15, moving from 15 to 12 rounds. You know, one of the things that I think Max Kellerman always says, the difference between boxing and UFC in terms of danger is in UFC, when there's a devastating punch, whatever, it's over quickly. Like it's and you don't have sustained damage a lot of times. And so, you know, you reduce the idea of concussions in the brains, you know, but sometimes, you know, having someone like a Deontay Wilder hit you might be sometimes better, you know, because you're down and out, than having somebody who's a hard puncher but is not going to knock you out, and, you know, who's going to hit you with solid thuds, but, you know, it's not a one-punch knockout artist. And, you know, that does damage over, you know, over 12 rounds of a fight. And it, what you hope is your corner can kind of pay attention. Nobody's better than Buddy McGirt. And, you know, he stepped in, I think everybody thought at the appropriate time, because he was sensing that there wasn't, you know, that Maxwell wasn't right. You know, sometimes there's nothing you can do. It's your time. You know, the unfortunate, you know, he has a young child and a young wife. And, you know, this is the tragedy of the game. And it's like one of the things you said a lot, you know, this is where, you know, people get mad at people like Floyd and folks who talk about hit, don't get hit is the key. And you know, people, you know, call them chicken and whatever. When you see something like this, you understand why Floyd approaches the game, but he approaches it. You know, we keep reinforcing this kind of warrior mentality, you know, that, you know, the sweet science, we don't talk enough about the sweet science. And so that's the part we want to really capture and don't want to be folks who are adding to that, you know, in our commentary. And I think we spend a little bit more time talking about the sweet science of boxing and reinforcing that. So I'm sure you're going to be catching those moments. I think that's going to be an important moment. It usually happens, you know, before the main event, when that kind of recognition happens, and, you know, be sense to kind of get, you're going to be in the arena and get a kind of a sense of like the reflection of what, you know, how people react in the arena at that moment when they're ringing that 10 count. We had some other stuff blow up. You hit me with this text. I was like, man, I just saw Dylan White just fought last week on the zone over there where, you know, where I call the streaming line that you can't find. Like, you don't know that fight. You don't know that fights are happening. They got the best fights never seen over there in the zone. But, you know, he's trying to make his run. He's doing his thing. And then he gets hit with PEDs. Kind of break down with what happened with our listeners who may not be able to catch that story.
Now, this is one of the most ridiculous, one of the most scandalous things I've ever heard. The very next day after the unfortunate brain injury that was suffered to Maxime Dadashev, because they fought Friday, and then Dillian Whiteman fought the next day on Saturday. And apparently he tested positive for UCAD's test for D-ball, which is an anabolic steroid, right? And they let him fight. And not only do they let him fight, they notify him, they notify his promoter that he had tested positive for anabolic steroids. But they did not, but to the knowledge of the promoter of Oscar Rivas, they didn't notify him that his opponent tested positive for steroids. So that is the most scandalous, dangerous thing. And not only, and other than that.
Wow.
It gets worse. You know how in boxing, before you get to the arena, you have two pair of gloves that are approved by the athletic commission. That okay, these gloves fit the standards. You know what I'm saying? They're up to code, and the other team is usually present. Like the other coaches and stuff like that are usually present to test out the gloves and see, okay, there's padding in these gloves. Okay, this is a correct amount of weight and stuff, something like that. So Dillian White had two gloves tested, right? He shows up on fight night with a different, completely different set of gloves, and they did not allow Reeves' team to inspect the gloves. So just two new gloves that were not inspected at all that he gets to put on and wear. And it was a crazy situation. Dillian White did end up winning the fight. he did get knocked down actually by Oscar Rivas, but he ended up winning the fight in a I think the fight was a little closer than the scorecards kind of led on, but he did end up winning the fight. But the circumstances surrounding the fight are preposterous. No.
So I'm like Eddie, man. What you doing over here? Like, what are you doing, man? Like, what y'all running over there, UK? Now, you want to do the rematch over the UK? You want to do that? No.
You saw Andrew Reed said on Twitter.
With Andy. Yeah, Andy. Like, I ain't trying to come over there.
I ain't going over there. That's a setup.
Oh my goodness, so, boy!
You're talking about what's up with these heavyweights and steroids, right?
Yeah.
Drugs. Do you know that both Dillian White and Jarrell Miller are both represented by Eddie Hearn? So I don't necessarily think you could point the finger directly at Eddie Hearn because he is a promoter, but. What's going on over there?
People talk about being on the wrong side of the street. That's the wrong side of the street. You know, it's like what are y'all doing over there in the street? My goodness. And think about it. These are two powerful guys. Like, what else do you need? Like, it's like, you know, I'm like, what's the purpose of it? Like, were you recovering from an injury? What was going on? Because these are two powerful guys and it's like you don't really need that, you know. Just box, you know. You already got size, and so it's like, why add this extra layer onto as a boxer, you know, knocking people out is a lot about timing and positioning angles, anyway, you know. In addition to power, so it's like, you know, why put yourself in jeopardy on something like this and take away the momentum and time when you can be making this big money? So that stuff is crazy. We're gonna keep an eye on it, you know. You know, like I told you, like the boxing, the heavyweight division is gaining on so much momentum and so much energy. The last thing they need is these kind of things, disruptive fights. They don't need that. There's enough opportunity out there for a whole bunch of guys to really be able to get into the game, and they got to clean that up, you know. And Eddie trying to hustle and, you know, try to create that his, you know, his American-based, USA-based establishment, trying to get in by any means necessary, but. You know, you can't detract from the game. It's not like this doesn't happen in UFC. UFC just had some major stuff happen
all the time.
But that makes a little bit more sense because of the nature of the martial arts in the multiple ways people are coming at you. When you're a heavyweight, most of y'all got power. You know, you just put your paws on them, they going down. Like, why do you need other extra stuff on your training? Just get out there and do your thing. So we'll keep an eye on it, but as we transition,
that begs the huge question that I have to ask.
Yeah. Yes,
with the recent tragedies going on and these positive tests and people testing positive for performance enhancing drugs, do you think this begs for more stringent and more strict punishment as far as when these guys are testing positive? Like, it seems like the punishment for these guys are not enough. Like, you got guys like Canelo Alvarez. He didn't – what he tested for wasn't an anabolic steroid. Like, he did test positive for PED and clenbuterol. So, and what was his punishment? His punishment was, okay, 6 months off. He only fights twice a year, so that's not much of a punishment. So he's going to make that up anyway. So he didn't fight in May. Okay, I'm going to fight in September, and I'll make up my May date by fighting in December. So he didn't really miss out on anything. So he's like, you know what? So other guys are like, you know what? He didn't really get slapped that hard with the punishment, so maybe I can afford to do it as well. So that's like something that I would look forward to, is seeing what the punishments are going forward.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges you have in boxing that you don't have in other sports is that you have all these multiple layers. So you have all these different, you have the alphabet associations. Then you have you have regulation by state, you know, so there's no oversight anywhere to break this down. So like UFC, Dana White and them are judge and jury. They can set it and push it up. You know, people don't like it. NFL, there's a way they're judge and jury, the leagues. But in boxing, they liked it that way because it's easier for the promoters to make money. They can look the other way. There's so much other corruption because there's no unifying organizational entity that can react to that. And if one of them takes a really strong position like that, then that might hurt their ability to create fights and do everything else. So there's no incentive right now, unless people just stop consuming, for them to kind of come together and try to figure that out. And so that's the challenge, you know. So in boxing, it's the fighters like Floyd and them who got leverage. We say, I'm not fighting you unless you do this. You know, that's right. The way they hold people accountable is that these stars who got it hold you accountable to doing it if you want the big money with me. That's the way it's been regulated in boxing. And then people get mad at people like Floyd and them because he's doing it, but he's trying to make sure people fight clean. He's not trying to get stuck. And then he's trying to fight in space where he know he can control some of those things. I'm going to do it in Vegas, so I know I'm not going to get duped. You know, he's already duped as an amateur. He's not trying to get duped again. So unless you got that kind of control, it's hard, you know. So it's those elite boxers who have that mindset who actually are the de facto first. Because if you want the money, if you want to come to the paper, you got to do it the way I want you. Mm-hmm. So that's the challenge right now in boxing. But we'll see. I think, you know, again, you know, these things keep coming. The one thing they're trying to stay away from is congressional hearings. With John McCain passing away, who is someone who's an avid boxer fan, I don't know who's in Congress who pays enough attention to it. John McCain was one person who did pay attention to it as an avid boxer. So he's the one, when things really got hot, who kind of threatened some type of congressional intervention. I'm not sure if we have those kind of people right now in Congress who are paying enough attention to this to say, you know, we need to do something.
Yeah, and that's a scary thing for the future, because you think like we see deaths and things, and it's not too far in the past where mixed martial arts was a not a sanctioned event in the state of New York.
Like, that's right.
I think it was just like five to 10 years ago where
that's right.
UFC could not hold events in New York. So you could see like if there are more dangerous situations like what has occurred, like there's more deaths, and say what if it happens on a national stage, like say if it happens again on like ESPN, God forbid, it happens on Fox or happens at the pay-per-view event, like that might spark the spark a movement in like Congress where they can say, you know what, maybe the state of New York or maybe the state of Georgia, and then it might spread, like, you know what I'm saying, maybe boxing might not be permissible in these states.
Yeah. And the other potential driver you just mentioned, because of the way that boxing is being consumed now, who could actually change this are entities like ESPN and Fox, these established entities who can't afford to have bad press like this. And the amount of money they spend on it could force boxing. They, in some ways, they could become the de facto oversight because of who they are. And they're very concerned about their image in ways that when you were setting up fights before and those relationships with the arenas and things like that, that became the driving part where the promoter was kind of the center. When you bring in partners like Fox and ESPN, that becomes a whole nother kind of entity. So in some ways they could be the de facto because they're laying out the money and they're creating this streaming platform that's creating a lot more revenue. And therefore, they do dictate, you know, like they do. They dictate Thursday night games in football, right? They dictate, you know, Christmas Day games in basketball. Like these networks, when they start putting money down, there's certain things they know that's good for television, and that might be another way that you start to see those kind of controls come in because it's pressure from TV execs who want to see that kind of stuff for the long term of the game and their investment. So it's gonna be interesting to watch that. Before we move on to the main event and to the fight tonight, we wanted to close the chapter on, obviously, on the Pacquiao and Keith Thurman fight. Was an incredible thing. You know, both you and I thought, you know, hey, you know, when you put two fighters who are skill level, high skill level, you go with the young dog. I think that's kind of how everybody did until Pacquiao got in there doing the Ali shuffle on him. And just, you know, just like pace and control from beginning of the fight. I think I had it 115, 113 Pacquiao at the end. I thought Keith had some really decent rounds, but I think Keith did not, unlike the one thing he could learn from Mayweather. Huh?
You mean 115, 112?
Yep, yep.
We have a lot going here.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's when you look at that fight, you know, what was your kind of thoughts on that fight? And then the second part of that is, you know, what's the next step for both these fighters? If you were advising, what would be the next step you advise for both these fighters?
So my takeaway from this fight is Manny Pacquiao in the first half of the fight, he looked really good. He looked young. I know he's 40 years old, but he was moving. He was moving.
He was 28.
Hit him with the James Brown. I feel good. And then he did the Ollie Shuffle. I was like, this might be a long night.
He feeling good.
My pick, but Keith Thurman, I thought he would be able to catch Manny Pacquiao coming in if he was fighting on the back foot, because he's usually an outside fighter that moves in, and Pacquiao would usually buff in for a bunch of them. But there's two things that I saw in this fight. Well, more than two, but two things I'm going to get into right now. But Pacquiao was obviously way too fast coming in, where Thurman wasn't able to time him. But so that really took away that part of the game plan, fighting the outside and stuff like that. And his power is still there. The power, like they say in boxing, is power is the last thing to go. But the knockdown, actually, I think it was more of a balanced knockdown, because he was running, because he was backing away, and he squared up, and he kind of like squared. He was off balance when he got hit with the punch. But that leads into the most important part of the fight. To me, that is, because Keith Thurman, he was getting off, he was landing a lot of clean shots. But I think where he lost the fight, in my opinion, Keith Thurman lost the fight because he doesn't have a poker face. He's a guy, when he gets hit clean, he gets hit good, and he gets hurt, he's the guy that he got to get out of there. It's different being inside the ring than, you know what I'm saying, than watching it on TV. Because I know them shots hurt too. But that's an important thing in the sport, because you see the way that when Pacquiao would get hit, Pacquiao would be like, ah. And you get mad, smack his gloves together, you know what I'm saying, and let's go. But when Keith Thurman gets hit, he's going to sprint around the ring, you know what I'm saying, and that gives a bad that gives like a bad impression on the judges. They're saying like, okay, that punch was effective. You know what I'm saying? This is effective. So if when you look at, like, I know punch stats are not something you can necessarily go off of all the time in boxing, but they kind of bring your attention to, okay, maybe Keith Thurman really is landing punches. So the next round you look at it, Keith Thurman is landing a lot of punches. Like when he's fighting on the front foot, backing Manny Pacquiao up, He can hold in place with a jab and land a couple more. But the thing is, I think Keith Thurman, he's so wired. Like, he's been fighting in that outside fire style, you know, fighting on the outside style for so long that he's programmed to do that. So, like, when he's fighting, when he has success on the outside, when he has success on the inside, he can't help but to back up and, you know what I'm saying, back up. And he was doing that, like he was having success fighting the inside, back and back in. Yeah. Yeah. After land two or three punches, he would just retreat.
Yeah, he get him up on the ropes, have him going, and then he just back out rather than staying right in there and punishing him. I mean, you hit it right on, like he got so uncomfortable in there, and he took a body shot. He took a devastating body shot where he showed you, that late in the fight, I think that's what sealed the deal.
Exactly. That's the thing that sealed the fight with Pacquiao, in my opinion, because on my scorecard, I don't score fights. You know, I don't score fights on the first time I watch them, but I usually watch fights a couple of two, three times, and then really get like a feel of like what was going on in the fight. But I had it 14-13, six rounds of six. Thurman got knocked out in the first round. That was different in the fight. But right there, he was coming on strong. Keith Thurman had won a good two, three rounds in a row.
Yeah.
And he rebounded after the 10th round. In my opinion, he won at least one of the last two rounds.
Yeah.
Those moments, can swing around the other way. He might be winning those 10 to 15 second stretches of the round, but then you get hit with a punch and you retreat. And that tells the judges that can that event can sway the judges' opinion, saying, "Okay, I'm gonna give that round to Pacquiao because you know he landed a significant strike."
Well, we definitely know that both these fighters are gonna have some fights. You know, it was a great fight. You know, even though Thurman lost, one of the things I said that I think he could learn from that fight, like Canelo learned from when he lost to Mayweather. I know Doug Fisher said, you know, Thurman's a little bit older than Canelo was, but if you take the 2 years that he was off, which, you know, basically from 28 to 30, you know, he's right in that same range when you think about his boxing years where he took 2 years off. He's just now getting back in. There's something he can learn from this fight that could be kind of push him moving forward. And so I think there's an opportunity that when you're thinking about like Thurman's next step, you know, what would you recommend if you're advising him? How would you expect him to really start to get himself back on track?
All right. So, how old is Keith Thurman? Because
30.
Well, because when Canelo fought Floyd Mayweather, he was 23. Even though he did have a lot of pro,
yeah, he had like by that time he had like 40 fights.
Yeah, 43 professional fights when he fought Floyd Mayweather. But Keith Thurman, he's 30 years old. He isn't necessarily in the younger stage of his career, but like you said, he can learn because everybody can learn. But I don't know where he can.
Do you think he's outgrown his trainer? I know he's been with him, you know, ever since his other trainer died, and this trainer was like the second to his other trainer, and he kind of stayed with him. But do you think at this point Keith needs to he just needs another voice? Do you think
I don't know how much longer Keith has in the game. Cause the guy that he, the impression he has on me is, I don't know if he's the guy that's going to fight until he's 38, 39 years old.
He's got a bright future after boxing.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that's going to be content to, especially because he takes like long layoffs and stuff like that. He's the guy that he is going to have a life outside of boxing. So like, I think he's going to fight for like a good 2-3 more years, and then he's going to transition to the broadcasting booth, in my opinion. So that leaves the question of who does he want to fight next. I think he'll probably go and fight Danny Garcia maybe in a rematch. Mm-hmm. Maybe he might fight he's going to need to have some fights coming back up, especially if he's not going to take a rematch with Manny Pacquiao. He might fight Garcia again. He might fight Porter again. Maybe he might step up and fight Spencer Crawford. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe that'll be in the future. Yeah, it's not going to be this year. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And maybe he might move up to 154 for a fight or two, and then I think he's going to be out the game. But for Manny Pacquiao, him being the champion, it's a good thing for boxing, but at the same thing, it could stagnate the sport of boxing because we don't know necessarily what it's going to do. Like, it's a good thing for boxing because it gives more eyes in the sport. Yep. But you get the guys like, even though I hate him, Skip Bayless. you got guys like Skip Bayless, Colin Cowherd, Stephen A. Smith. They're talking about boxing, so that's a good positive thing for the sport. But at the same time, I don't think he's necessarily going to fight Spence. I know he's not going to fight Crawford. But the good thing about that is he's going to be at the end of his road pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Because, I think he's going to fight 2 or 3 more times, and then he's going to be out the game as well. Mm-hmm. But he might end up fighting Spence. Actually, now to think about it, he might end up fighting like a guy like Amir Khan. Because you look at Amir Khan, mm-hmm. He just fought a couple weeks ago. This is the most cherry-picking fight I've ever seen. He fought a guy named Billy Dib, which a lot of hardcore fans don't know who he is. But he fights at 130, right? He last fought Kevin Farmer at featherweight. And then his next fight was Amir Khan at welterweight. Out of Saudi Arabia, whatever. But Saudi Arabia.
There you go. You got it right.
You're over
in Baltimore. You hanging too much. You hanging out too much with them Terps.
Oh yeah, man. It's been a fun time. But yeah, he fought Amir Khan out there, and Amir Khan got $7 million out there. Wow. For this fight with the featherweight. So that is intriguing because Manny Pacquiao can come over and say, you know what, I'll come out here for $30 million. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He'll fight him. And that's gonna be a cherry pick for him because you know he's gonna knock him out. he can turn around and fight Errol Spence at Cowboy Stadium, and you know what kind of ticket sales are gonna do in Dallas. Yeah. Cowboys, Manny Pacquiao versus Errol Spence Jr. in Jerry World. That pay per view is gonna be crazy.
Errol Spence is gonna drive up like Jalen Ramsey in a Brinks truck. Wait, try to grab his money on the way out.
Yep. Then if you win the game, if you win the fight, you ride off in the sunset. If you lose the fight, hey, I pass the torch, and I'm gonna hang up the gloves. But I think that would be a good route for Manny Pacquiao.
That'd be a good one. Well, all right, you listen to RSG, a boxing moment. I'm here with my man Darnell Kirkland. Now this is D. Wills. I'm broadcasting live from outside of Rockville, Illinois, home of NBA champion Fred VanVleet. And my man Darnell, he is outside of Baltimore area, but he will be in Baltimore tonight for Gervonta Davis, who will be fighting in front of his home crowd in a fight. And I want you to kind of first break down some of the highlights with the undercard before we get to the main event.
Oh, yeah. So the big bummer, I just found this out today. My guy, Richardson Hitchens, his fight has been canceled.
Yeah, I saw it.
I was like, oh my goodness, man. I was waiting on, see, I was excited to see Richardson Hitchens fight in person. But also we have Memphis Miller, he's fighting. He's another guy out of the Mayweather gym. He's not necessarily a guy that's been acclaimed, you know what I'm saying? He's not a big name in the sport, but he can fight. He's a southpaw. He fights at 135. He's pretty good. And you also have and he's fighting Jezreel Corrales. And the other fight is Uriokas Gamboa. He's a big name, guys. He's a Cuban. He's very short. He can hit hard. Many will remember him for his days at Top Rank when he was – not Top Rank. When he was on HBO fighting for Rotten Asian. Yeah, he was
had a fight against Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, he fought against Terrence Crawford. Yeah, he fought against Terrence Crawford. A lot of people remember that. And a lot of people remember the fight that never was between him and Wamba Lopez. That fire. So he's gonna be on the undercard as well. But at the main event, we got Gervonta Tank Davis making his homecoming. He's gonna be fighting. It's mandatory, and I predict he's going to get a very, very early stoppage, 2-3 rounds, in my opinion.
So I have a chance to go see Max Holloway fight after that, then, right? Yeah. I got enough time. I got a chance to watch that and Max's fight. Okay, good.
But don't blink. You might miss it. Don't blink. But the crazy thing, we mentioned him earlier. I just mentioned him earlier. Tevin Farmer, this fight we're forgetting about. He's fighting on the zone. In Philly, another hometown fight. But once again, just like Tank Davis, he's not fighting nobody that we've heard of. Mm-hmm. He's not fighting a fighter to his level of competition, in my opinion. So I don't understand why they didn't just fight each other.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's just boxing for you. But that's a fight we can see in the future. But actually, what I saw is one thing I want to touch on. It's because Leo Santa Cruz, because Canelo Alvarez, like we saw, he said he's not going to be fighting on that September 14th because he had trouble finding an opponent. That's a topic for another day. But this ties into what we're talking about today. Because Leo Santa Cruz said he'll gladly take the Mexican Independence Day, Mexican Independence Weekend, to fight Gervonta Davis. He wants to fight Gervonta Davis on Mexican Independence Day. And Javante Davis said, I'm down for it. And the drawback from people talking, speculation, is saying maybe PBC is not going to let Davis fight on such a quick turnaround because he's fighting in July today and he's going to fight again the second week of September. But I don't know, because it depends on what happens tonight. I don't think he's going to take a whole night at all. And it seems like Tank is going to be down for it. So if Tank does get that second round knockout, third round knockout, we might be able to see that fight on September 14th. That's something to stay tuned for. I really want to see that fight. What do you think was going to happen if they lock horns?
You know, it's going to be busy. I think Santa Cruz just has to watch. I mean, one of the things about Tank is he can be explosive and has the ability to, like, get you in between punches. And so, you know, it's going to be high skill. You know, you don't have to look for the action. But one of the things going to be interesting to see how Tank uses his strength, right, to control space and control distance. And then you got to watch some explosive moments, because Santa Cruz will, like, trade. He'll get busy. He'll be throwing. But that's where that counterpunch, Tank can catch you. Uppercuts, I mean, he hits you with some. And so you think about who can be more explosive. I feel like Tank can be, like, explosive in those moments. But it could be a great fight. It could go to the cards. You know, the thing about Tank is that he's going to have to be busy with him early. You know, those are the kind of fights you can't give up first and second rounds, because if it does go to the card, you don't want to be playing catch up. And so, but it's a fight that's worth seeing. We might have to try to see if we can get in the building.
Yeah, because, you know, Santa Cruz, in my opinion, he's going to have to box. He showed us in the Carl Frampton fight, he can fight behind his jab and box, because that's one thing we haven't seen Javante Davis necessarily go against.
Yeah.
In my opinion, Javante Davis would probably win that style as well, because one thing he doesn't get really any much credit for, even because, you know, he didn't go to Olympics or anything like that.
Yeah.
He had a very polished amateur record. He has a record of 206-15 in the amateur. Mm-hmm. He fought. Yeah. He can speak that language as well. Yeah. So I think you got to be careful who you're calling out, because he doesn't necessarily have a high level of competition as of yet for Javante Davis, but I think you might be barking up the wrong tree. But
I think the only one advantage of Javante taking that fight is he doesn't risk getting out of shape and having to get in shape. He's already in shape. So you can keep him training. You know, you get those pictures online when he's gone up like 20, 30 pounds.
Yeah.
But what's great about this is that he can stay in training camp mode, you know, maybe take, you know, a week to kind of chill for a minute, but still stay in that training camp mode, which could make him even sharper, which can make him dangerous. He's young enough to fight multiple fights like that.
Have you seen him in training camp? No, Tank is in shape right now.
Oh, he's in shape right now. But you know, when the fight is over, he's out there, you know, indulging. And so,
but you know, but he got a newborn baby too. So he got that. Yeah. You know,
well, brother, I'm gonna say this: make sure you're taking pictures, capture your own videos, send some stuff out to us. Let's capture more stuff. But enjoy your experience out there, I'm gonna be following you. You know, we might even have to hit one up on Facebook Live real quick while you're in the stadium. We might do something, but in the arena. But, you know, enjoy your time out there, man. And we look forward to the post-fight discussion.
All right.